Welcome to another edition of the 51%, Conversations with Creative Women. I'm Sandy Klein. Alisa Bresnahan has taken on many roles, and I mean that literally. She is an actress with an impressive resume, having performed on and off Broadway in nearly 24 regional theater productions, as well as film and television. Most recently, she played Rose, the young hero's mother in the much-heralded Lincoln Center production of War Horse, the epic and stunningly inventive World War I drama featured majestic, life-sized puppetry representing the show's horses. They were portrayed by actors serving as puppet masters both inside and outside the animals. War Horse galloped off with 5 Tony Awards in 2011, including Best Play, and it ran until January 2013. The play marked Alisa's Lincoln Center debut, but get this. She happened to have been 5 months pregnant when she first auditioned in 2010. Fortunately, rehearsals began in early 2011 when her daughter was about 4 months old. Not easy breastfeeding an infant while doing 8 shows a week. More about that later. Alisa graduated from NYU Tisch School of the Arts Experimental Theater, and early on in her career, she was cast as the lead in Iphigenia in Taurus at La Mama in New York City, and also toured with the play in Greece, performing not only in English, but in ancient and modern Greek. More about that later, too. It was during an acclaimed production of A Streetcar Named Desire at the Hartford Stage in 98 that Alisa, who played Stella, met her husband, fellow actor James Colby, cast as Stanley. Bresnahan was also known to Connecticut audiences for her roles as Maggie in Cat on a Hot Tin Roof and Maxine in Night of the Iguana. Alisa was nominated for a Joseph Jefferson Award for Actors in a principal role for her performance as Serafina in The Rose Tattoo at the prestigious Chicago Goodman Theater. Oh, and one more thing. As a member of Audiophile's Golden Voices, Alisa has brought dozens of books to life, winning several awards for her work. So it's a real pleasure to welcome you today. That went on for hours, didn't it?
That was fabulous. Boy, I sound so good. Thank you, Sandy.
So I'm guessing that you're probably as impressed by your background as I am.
Well, I am now. In your mouth, I sound great.
Before we harness War Horse, I got to talk about this Greek tragedy craziness. I mean, you're not Greek.
No.
And who speaks ancient Greek, much less modern Greek, but Greeks.
Uh-huh.
And you find yourself in this role in Greece, forced to learn the languages, correct?
Well, yes. For some reason, Greek theater has always circled me. I think it's the size and the, I don't know, just the
scope?
The style of it. Yes. It's always, I'm always even now getting calls for, oh, would you think about doing Clytemnestra, you know, the one who got killed by her son. At least 2 or 3 times a year, someone has some Greek production that they've heard about me and they're wanting to know if I, and I always say to my husband, my God, I can't do that again.
Because it's so intense.
It's so intense. It's so, I mean, they're fabulous. They're incredible stories. They are, you know, the roots of theater as we know it. And, but it takes a lot out of you to bring all that up and to the size of what it is.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, when I was 22, I walked into an open call that Ellen Stewart was having at La Mama. Who founded La Mama, was La Mama. She happened to be in the room when I was auditioning for the Greek Theater of the South. They were coming to La Mama and doing a production that was going to be bilingual and half American, half Greek cast. And she was in the room and said, and after my audition, she said, that's Iphigenia. And they said, okay, but she doesn't speak Greek. Okay, when we get to Greece, because we performed in New York first, when we get to Greece, we'll switch actresses. We'll have somebody else play the Greek actress. Well, as it went along, we were learning songs in Greek, and I just picked it up. I learned the Greek like music, and my mom is Mexican. Languages have come easily to me, and I just did it. And so then halfway through New York, they said, you know what, we'll just stick with you being Iphigenia.
You were convincing enough with your newfound languages.
Yes. And then, and so when we went to Greece, we rehearsed there for 6 weeks in Athens, and then we toured for about 4 months the ancient theaters of Greece, which are all outdoors.
Right.
And we when we were in Athens, we had to rehearse at night because it was so hot. I remember we would rehearse outside. And it was tremendous. It was a very moving or motivating and experience to be making theater and just speaking in these places that were ancient tributes.
Right, where great dramas were born.
Yes.
I remember being in Greece and they had son and lumière shows, sound and light shows at night, and you would be in these cavernous Colosseum-type places with actors and actresses on stage. Watching it was amazing. Yes. Performing in it must have been doubly amazing.
It's funny you say about watching it, because I remember, you know, it's not like new theater. Everybody knows the stories.
Exactly.
Of what's, everybody, they're like folk tales that have been told over and over and over again. And I remember looking out into the audience and seeing all the cigarettes glowing in the dark, because the audience is sitting there just thinking about, you know, their history. I mean, it's really a wonderful, beautiful thing.
I guess there must be an interesting contrast between wanting to keep these great dramas alive, but on the other hand, not feeling that that's what you wanted your career to be.
You've hit it on the nail. I mean, the nail on the head. It was a shock, to say the least, to come back from that, a culture shock and an artistic shock, everything, to come back from that experience and feel so full of what I wanted to do and what I had experienced and how I could, you know, somehow translate that and bring that to where I lived. And it has been a long search to find that in New York theater, or in American theater. I did in 2000 a production with Peter Hall, the Royal Shakespeare Company. They did a production of Tantalus that was a 15-hour show that toured in England, and that was comparable. And I have to say War Horse was comparable in terms of scope, in terms of the story, in terms of pure theater that was not trying to be TV or film, that was not trying to compare, but was busting open its own envelope and doing as, you know, using the stage to be anything you could imagine.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like a lot of times theater has suffered because, you know, the visual media of television and film, if you compare it too much, you lose what each one is magnificent and the potential of each one.
In and of itself.
Yes, and theater has suffered from that, I think.
But I think there's been kind of a resurgence.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely.
But not because there are Greek tragedies being performed, but you've got the Book of Mormon or these other Broadway spectacles, or even Bette Midler, doing a one-woman show.
Right, right.
I'm curious, were you worried about being typecast? You know, here are these very difficult roles, I mean, which are very impressive, but did you think that you could come into New York and not take it by storm, but maybe do something more contemporary? Is that what you wanted to do if you had a fairy godmother?
The first contemporary language that came out of my mouth was Streetcar Named Desire, was Tennessee Williams, and that's where I met my husband. And that was the first time where I was, you know, talking about setting the table and getting the dinner ready and putting on my shoes. And it was very simple, and I loved it.
Mm-hmm.
I thought, wow, this is so I mean, it's not easy, but it's
relatable,
simple, and there's not a muscle that has to pump up for it. Estella was the most subtle, calm, genteel, simple, beautiful person that I have ever played. The fact that I met my husband while being that person, the person that I loved the most of myself.
Yeah, but he was an SOB, you know.
But, of course, Stella found what was magnificent
about him.
Anyway, so that, though, I'm all over the map. But, so, yeah, the Streetcar Named Desire was the first contemporary, and that was, you know, 1948 it was
exactly
written. So not too contemporary, but.
So you have really been cast in these iconic roles, The Rose Tattoo, Cat on a Hot Tin Roof, and you've brought your own meaning to these roles. Is that something that you like, or would you like to be cast in something completely original?
Well, I don't anything that is I try not to have a say of no, mm-hmm. I don't want to do this. Mm-hmm. War Horse was...
Was that your biggest break?
Certainly, yeah. I mean, that was Lincoln Center and Broadway. That was...
Huge.
Fabulous, yeah.
Let's talk about that. What was that like?
To be honest, we were pregnant, and we didn't have much in the pockets. And we were counting on the old wives' tale of babies bring luck and money. Mm-hmm. That was what we were banking on, mm-hmm. literally. And my agent called and said, would you be interested in going in for this? And I looked it up, because, of course, it was already a big hit in London. And I looked it up, and I thought, you know what? I could get this job because they have the stars. The stars are the horses.
Horses.
They're the puppets, and they—
Which are unbelievable. These masks are made of leather and airplane cable and—
Bamboo.
Steel.
They are magnificent creatures. They really are.
That's a good point. The stars are the puppets.
They are. Mm-hmm. And so I thought, you know what? I could get this because they don't need a name, mm-hmm. and I need this job. And so I went in with that confidence and that, push, and I got it. There are have been a handful of times when I have felt that, when you read it, the breakdown, or you get a call and you think, yes, this is for me. There are a lot of other ones that are nail biters and you don't know, but there have been, a few that are like, this is it.
And you would have been more stunned if you didn't get the part.
I don't know. I guess so. I didn't think about it. And maybe it was because I was pregnant.
Did they know?
Your brain. Yes,
they knew that you were pregnant. Okay. Well, you were showing, I suppose.
Yes. And you know how your brain works a little differently when you're pregnant.
You think?
And there are things you don't think about. Mm-hmm. So it was a clarity, I guess.
And explain what that was like to have been given the word as well as giving birth. I mean, all the stars were so aligned. I mean, you had these two huge events in your life
at the same time. It's true. When it rains, it pours. You get the two things that I had been praying for as long as I could remember.
I want to ask you, so you were in your early 40s when you got the role? Is that considered late?
Yes, I think so. I think so. I mean, I didn't have an agent till I was 36.
Why? You didn't need one?
No, not for lack of trying. I don't know what it is. I don't know what it is. It could have been a little bit what I was talking about finding my place, finding who I was, what I present to the world, how I can fit what I do, what I feel good about doing, what I feel that I am here to express, finding the place for that. Where can that fit in? Which is, a lot of what theater is and being an actor is, it's not like you can go into a room and paint and then you're done.
Mm-hmm.
You have to have, other people have to be involved. There has to be some opening there that is set up that you can walk through or push down, or it is a community event to work. You can't work by yourself. So finding those people, finding that language, finding that space that I fit into is any actor's life's work.
But you knew that this was, forgive the drama, your calling, that you wanted from a young age to do this?
Yes. My mom was in theater education. My father was a singer and a musician with a pretty incredible voice. My father has a tremendous voice. And I did, street theater with them in the 70s with their different Hispanic theater company and things like that. It was always what I did instead of go to camp.
And this was in Massachusetts,
yes.
Where you're from?
Mm-hmm. Yes, in Brookline. Mm-hmm. And, I took dance classes. I never had the sit down with my parents and say, look, guys, I want to be an actor. I wanted to travel. I went to Europe after high school before I went to college. And after traveling, I said, I want to go to New York City. This is a world city. I want to be there. And so I applied to the Tisch School of the Arts, and I was put into the experimental theater wing. And I had a great experience, but half of what I half of my teacher was the city. I really loved being here and all of what the history of theater here, the history of downtown theater here, the history of theater companies, the history of theater styles. But it was based downtown. The experimental theater wing is experimental theater. So the notion of going, we used to have a joke, above 14th Street is a big step and another.
To go to Times Square.
It's another place. Mm-hmm. It's another dimension. And so that took, well, it took until War Horse to
get you there.
To get there.
But on the other hand, even though the route was circuitous, you were working in some very prestigious regional theater, the Goodman, the Hartford Stage. I mean, the list is pretty long. I think I counted close to 24 productions outside of New York. Was that satisfying to you?
Yes. Yes. I love to work, and I was fortunate to always be working on great plays, which was the writing, that was the most important. And it wasn't until I met my husband and I started doing the Tennessee Williams and really kind of getting closer and closer to New York and closer to simplicity in what I was doing. I think when I first started out as an actress, I had a lot of energy. I was very loud. I was very strong, had big emotions. And again, finding the place for that, finding the refinement of that. The more I was simple, the more I was not the Clytemnestra, the Cassandra, the Electra, the Greek
broads.
The more I wanted to just sit down at a table and have a conversation.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then that also did lead, of course, to film and television, which is something that I've always been wanting to do. I've done a little bit, but not a lot, and that has. I want to get there.
And you expect to be doing more?
I do.
So what would be an ideal if the door, somebody knocked on the door now, what would be really ideal for you?
Well, I tell you, I was not allowed, this is probably the other thing, I wasn't allowed to watch television growing up.
Hmm.
And I don't watch very much now. And I watched a lot of foreign movies when I was young and a lot of musicals. So I watch occasionally, Boardwalk Empire.
Sure, HBO.
Yeah. Those seem to be really great. Once I put my daughter to bed, I have about 40 minutes before I fall asleep myself.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, certainly cable TV seems to be great writing. I mean, just really great.
So you're waiting for that phone call, which you feel could come.
Yeah.
Because for now, your TV has been network television, right? Law and Order and a couple
yes,
of shows like that.
Yes, I did
that.
A little. And then I started to do film. And then I should say about 6 years ago, I had an accident where my dog bit my lip off.
Oy.
Which put a halt on
camera
work.
Oh, my God.
So that, the ball was starting to roll, and then I had to stop. And so I had, the scar is better. It has been, but it did change things up a little bit.
I had spoken to a woman who's involved in the theater in one of our shows, and she said what I thought was a very odd thing. Actors should enjoy the idea of auditioning. You know, that should be as important as getting the role. And I thought to myself, really? I mean, for every time that you're turned down, I would think it would be extremely stressful and not necessarily such a pleasurable experience.
Well, I think I would agree if it's something interesting. There's a lot of stuff that you don't want to do. There's stuff that's not either doesn't pay well, it's not written well, it's maybe not where you want to be. Maybe it's, rehearsing over Christmas holidays for whatever reason, whatever's going on.
Okay.
Usually it's a money issue or a project issue. So those kinds of things are less interesting.
So the disappointment level may not be so great.
Exactly. But I would have to agree with the woman you were speaking with that if it's an interesting project, whatever it is that you need to raise up in yourself to say, I can do this, I want to do this, that feels good. And if you're prepared, it always feels good to do a good job. And if you're and I guess maybe it's later on as we do this longer, you realize that there are the things that you're right for, things that you're not right for, the things that were, or rather, the things that are meant to be, the things that are not meant to be.
Mm-hmm.
And I always feel good if I feel that I have done my best,
mm-hmm.
if I'm prepared, I've put my best foot forward and said what I wanted to say. And if it's not meant to be, it's not meant to be. But that interaction and that the action of doing that presentation is pleasurable, I think.
Was it nuts for you and War Horse with an infant? I read that you were breastfeeding in between shows.
Yeah, she would come. Well, my husband would bring her. And, yeah, we did. It was a lot of driving on his part and a lot of, you know, caring. He did the most of taking care of her while I was at work. Again, both things were fabulous. Both things
so
were what we wanted.
Mm-hmm.
The show was such a great success. The company was wonderful. It was just a great thing to be going to work every day to do. And, of course, your baby is your baby.
When you do a show 8 times a week?
Yes.
For as long as you do. I always wanted to ask that, be honest. Do you ever just sort of go through the motions?
Yes.
You do.
Yeah.
You do.
But that's where your technique comes in. Now, I had never, ever done, I mean, I did 718 shows of War Horse. That was 2 years, but I had never done anything close. The longest run I had been 6 months, let's
mm-hmm.
say, with breaks in between. So this was very different, and my For actors who do this on a regular basis, it is a tremendous, tremendous skill to be able to do it.
I mean, what if you're in a bad mood?
Yeah.
Or your baby didn't sleep all night and I'm fried.
But that's your job. At a certain point, you know your lines, you know what you're wearing, you know where you're going, you know where you're supposed to be at the end. You know, it's a map that you go through. So that part you don't have to worry about anymore. The work is whatever is bothering you, leave it alone, leave it outside, and get it up to make it happen. Because there are how many, 1,100 people out there, and they paid how many
mm-hmm.
lots of money to
mm-hmm.
come and see you? You make it happen. That's your job. That's your job.
Of course.
And it's
but there are definitely performances that are better than others. I mean, do you ever leave the station? Oh, damn it.
Yes, without a doubt. There are off shows, on shows, all of that. And maybe more often than not, you'll say, God, that was a terrible show. And someone will say, boy, that you had a great show.
Somebody professional or?
Yeah. That oftentimes it will be that the show that you feel you were just, wow, that was fabulous. Like, geez, you were a little hot there. That was a little much, you
uh-huh.
know. Or, oh, God, that was terrible. Man, you were so right on.
Isn't that crazy?
It's the, you know, it's the whatever happens.
Now, what happened to you post-War Horse? Did you think that this was going to open up a lot of doors for you? And has it?
So far, not.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, let's say I haven't worked since then.
I've done
on my audiobooks. But what I really wanted to do was be with my daughter. I wanted to make dinner and make dinners
mm-hmm.
on a regular basis to get her toilet trained.
There's a role.
So there were things that we, to change her sleeping schedule because she was, you know, staying up until I got home from the show and then we would both sleep late. All those
mm-hmm.
things. All those things. That was, that has been what has been the most important thing to me.
And so you're just reshifting focus.
Yes. And I also have to say that since being a mom, my focus has shifted on what I want to do. There have been a couple of things that have come through that I just, there was a, for example, would I want to go in for doing a play where the mom, the character's great part, great thing, her daughter was 5 years old. The story was her daughter was 5 years old and she had drowned in a swimming accident. And I thought, I can't
yeah,
do that.
Right.
I can't do that right now.
Mm-hmm.
Because you, when you're doing theater, you immerse yourself and you can't help but bring it home. And I just didn't. So there's been a couple of things and you know, going out of town, I can't do. So it's different now. I'm much more selective about what I can and feel I, and that'll change again.
Of course.
You know, once Shannon gets to a certain age and But just right now, the most important focus was with her. And now she's in school, and now... Okay.
There's a little more freedom for you.
See.
Yes, a little more flexibility. Do you do commercials also?
I do voiceover. Voiceover has always been my, you know, in-between things. I did a lot of voice when I lived in Los Angeles, a lot of commercial voiceover.
So it's fairly lucrative.
And yes, and I haven't, but audiobooks is really the thing that's kept me.
And you've done some really famous books.
Yeah, I've had very good fortune, very blessed to have been able to do that for as long as I have.
Well, obviously they don't suffer fools gladly. They picked you because you're good. Do you worry about getting older and getting work?
I always felt that I would, when I was younger, I couldn't wait to be older.
Mm-hmm.
And when I was a young actress, I never had the ingenue. I mean, I did the seagull. Maybe that was an ingenue. Well, yeah, she's the ingenue. But I always felt inside that I was waiting to be older to fit my age.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, when I compare what my husband goes out for, he goes out so much. When I say go out, he goes out for
auditions.
There's so much more opportunity for him for his age. I mean, as soon as he hit 40, it was like the doors opened, and it was, you know.
God, it's 2013. When is that going to change already?
It's true. But it is changing. It is definitely changing. I mean, I can't spend too much time thinking about that. I work. It always has come one thing or another. I would rather, you know, that Aesop's fable of the mama lion who compares to the hare, and the hare has however many babies,
mm-hmm.
and she looks over to the mama lion and says, "Whoa, I have 5 babies, and you've just had one." And the mama lion says, "Yes, but each one is a lion."
I get what you're saying. So when you sit here and you reflect over your career, you feel really good about it, don't you?
Well, I do today. Because such a nice interview an introduction you gave me.
But I didn't make it up.
Well, thank you. I mean, I do. I feel, I'm still here. And this is what I was confused, I think, very early on when I would say, you know, I want to be an actress. I'm working to be an actress. And it was associated with being rich and being famous.
Mm-hmm.
And that to me it's not an equation like that.
Mm-hmm.
It's not, you don't go in to do it. To be that. You be an actor because you can't be anything else. That's what they've always said. If you can do something else, do it.
Really?
Oh, yeah. If you can do anything else, do it. If this is what you can do, if this is what you're doing and you love doing it, no matter what, if you've still got stuff to say and stuff to do, then keep going. And I guess, I mean, sure, I don't think I want to be famous. I hope I'm not kidding myself. I would like to have money.
Mm-hmm.
I would like to have
security,
those kinds of things. I had that, you know, for a little bit of time on War Horse and was like, wow, so this is what it's like.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not why I'm an actor. It really is because I enjoy doing it and I get something from it that is my life. I was reading a Julie Harris obituary and some quotes that she had said about the theater and the theater being her religion. And, you know, that's a very private, almost too private to talk about, but that rang true to me. I mean, that it is a place, and already but it is like, and that's those theaters in Greece, it is a place of prayer.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it where people come together, and I, you know, you feel it even in War Horse. You have how many hundreds, thousands of people coming together, having a few hours together, sharing something. That is you can't get that anywhere
else.
That's
pretty potent.
It's a very powerful place to be, and a community is made. In that little bit of time, and that's what I want to do.
Well, in this little bit of time, we really got to know you, and it was a wonderful conversation. I only wish you the best of everything
in
your personal and in your professional lives.
I'm sure
Alisa Bresnahan is going to be around for a long time. Thanks so much for coming today.
Thank you for having me. Thank you.
Join us again for another edition of the 51% Conversations with Creative Women. I'm Sandy Klein.
Thanks for listening to the 51% Conversations with Creative Women. For show comments and suggestions, please follow us on Twitter at Sandy Klein Show. You can also find us on Facebook at the 51% Conversations. The show is produced and recorded by Chad Dugatz at the Hangar Studios in New York City. Sandy Klein is our executive producer.